Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
TLR 22, Mike. I'm telling you, TLR is a new name, the new acronym I'm going with. Like you said last week, it's a bit of a mouthful to go say the last round, even though we're going to stick with it. We'll stick with it, but for now, I'm going TLR. I think it's going to work. You think so?
I think it will. Nearly 6 months in.
Well, we got to change it up now. Six months. You know, half a year coming up on the latter half of this show going 1 year old. But you know, another big weekend, excuse me, a little tongue-tied right there. Another big weekend of fights. There was even some big news this morning, too, which, you know, jumped into our script just before we came on the air today. So we'll be able to talk about it. But we'll touch on that, of course, in the news and notes section of the show as we get through it. But starting off this past Friday, February 15th, from the Grand Casino in Hinckley, Minnesota, on ESPN, Rob Brandt. He had the middleweight title, right? This wasn't for a vacant title.
No, he had it. He beat Murata.
Yeah, he beat Murata, and that was in Vegas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember that was a big upset. Mm-hmm. So Rob Brandt retains his WBA world middleweight title, improves to 25-1 with 17 KOs when he stops in the 11th round. Kassan. It got me again. Hey. You know what? I'm gonna give it to you this time. You gotta pronounce it.
I'm gonna go with Kassan Bayansugurov.
All right.
That wasn't bad for an English guy.
I like it. You know, you can stay in the United States because of that. I like it. Kassan was down in rounds 2 and 11. So he got him out of there right before the 12th round. So, you know, of course. This didn't surprise me. Brandt talks about a fight with Canelo because, you know, Canelo is at
payday
160 pounds. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's been happening for years. You know, when Floyd was there, when Pacquiao was there, you know, De La Hoya. I mean, everybody. That's the moneymaker. So what'd you think about him calling out Canelo after? I mean, it's expected.
Yeah, it was expected. I think there's not much in it for Canelo. You know,
no.
Canelo's the name. Rob Brandt's just looking for a payday. I thought he did well. You know, Rob Brandt was up on the scorecards quite easily. He could have just coasted, you know, just gone through the 11th, you know, just danced around in the 12th and could have got the 12th round decision. So I thought it was a good idea, if you know, to actually go in there and to overwhelm him in the 11th and take him out. I mean, a bit of a statement. But I think calling out Canelo, he's just, you know, trying to get his name out there.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, you know, you call out the name and then people start writing stories or putting out content like, oh, so-and-so calls out Canelo. And then there's going to be casual fans who see Canelo's name like, oh, who's this guy? He's probably going to fight, you know?
I think he's probably the only person on the planet who's trying to call that fight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anyone else wants to see
Nobody else
it.
Thought about it. I mean, but if you think, if you look at it in this regard, he does have a world title. Is he the regular champion or is he super champion? Because we're here, we're WBA, so we got to differentiate.
I think is the two in that division, or is the two or three?
I feel like there's like three or four in every division.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking: is he regular or is he super duper?
I think he's regular champion.
Of course, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't believe we have this conversation every single week. Every single week, I don't get it.
Didn't he just make a gold champion, WBA gold, right? No.
Oh my God! Yes, news to me. You didn't. Why did you tell me that?
I'm sure I read that somewhere last week. There's a title now. Oh my WBA God. Gold.
So we got a champion in recess for the WBC. We got a regular, a super for the WBA, and now we got a gold champion.
Super duper.
What is a gold champion? what is that?
I think that's one below.
Now we're going off script here because we weren't even going to talk about this because I didn't even know. What? So a gold is like literally above super.
I think it's below.
Oh my God! What is going on here? Do they pay sanctioning fees for these belts every single time?
Yeah, 3%, isn't it?
Oh my gosh! I mean, whatever. You know, at the end of the day, everybody's got to get paid, so I understand. But you know, doesn't mean I have to appreciate it. But it is what it is. But Brandt, you know, like I said, He might not have the name recognition, but he does have a world title. He does have a major world title in the division. So, you know, that gives him some type of pull. He should probably get some decent paydays. So, you know, just like what? Just like with Mikey. Mikey wants the big fights. Mikey Garcia wants the big fights. But, you know, he moved to 140 for a unification bout against Lipnitz and then Easter at 135. Even though their name recognition isn't that big, but what sold it was a the unification, two title fights. So, I don't know. That could come in his favor. So, he could probably get, like, some pretty decent opponents. What do you think?
I don't think
he's going to get Canelo, but...
I don't think he's going to get Canelo. I think, you know, he needs to be looking more, you know, unifying titles around that weight division. If he can, you know, looking for something like, you know, maybe a Charlo. One of the fights I actually read that...
I can see Charlo.
That we could see, I think is more attainable for him, you know, is Jeff Horn.
The Hornet?
Yeah, Jeff Horn, the Hornet, is coming back, so...
At middleweight?
That's what they were saying, because I know he obviously struggled to make weight, didn't he, a couple of
times?
You
know what? I didn't think I can be more impressed by the Hornet, and I'm impressed now. If he goes to middleweight, he stung everybody at 147.
He's cleared out 147.
He stung everybody at 147 from down under, and now he's moving to one of the most dangerous weight divisions in boxing at 160. He's going to sting everybody over there. Man, this is insane.
I mean, 147 was too easy. So
He's
moving up, and he's just going to clear up.
Yeah, yeah. When he beat Pacquiao, he was just like, you know what? I can beat anybody. I'm going to move up. And then after he beats everybody at 160, he's going to move up to heavyweight and challenge Joshua, Wilder, Fury. I'm telling you, man, people, they're sleeping on the Hornet, but he's got a lot of honey in that sting.
He's going to take over.
He's going to the takeover. We're talking about Teofimo Lopez. Jeff Hornet is back on the takeover.
Yeah,
he was the original takeover.
The Thunder from Down Under.
Hey, but seriously though, but that's surprising if he's going to move up to 160.
That's what I read.
I heard about it, but I thought it was a joke.
No, well, he had trouble making weight, didn't he? Because remember when he came over and he was training at the top rank and he was saying it was too hot. That was one of the reasons he was struggling to get weight off, which kind of seemed unusual since he's from Australia.
I guess it's so hot down there. You got kangaroos and all that stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I apologize to our Australian fans if you're listening, but we hear it gets pretty hot down there.
Yeah, so I could see it, you know, like obviously he doesn't hold a title anymore since losing to Terence Crawford, so... You know, moving up in weight, fight against Rob Brandt, probably two B-level division fighters, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure Rob Brandt's probably got a small following in the US. Jeff Horn's got a huge following over there. So it could be a big payday if Rob Brandt wants to go over, fill a stadium over there.
That makes sense. I can see it.
It's a fight I could see. More attainable to me than fighting Canelo. It's lose-lose for Canelo.
Oh, yeah.
Rob Brandt's not really...
Hey, but, you know, Horn... You know, selling that, what is it, Suncorp Stadium down there in Australia?
Yeah.
I mean, he can entice people with that. Like, hey, you know, look, I did it with Pacquiao. And yeah, Pacquiao helped a lot, but, you know.
And even when he fought Anthony Mundine.
Yeah.
Two big Australian fighters, you know, that was a sellout, I believe, over there.
So the Hornet, he's got a drawing power. We're talking about like Jose Ramirez and those guys in Fresno. Nah, man. The Hornet in Australia is a bigger draw globally, not just Australia. He's all over the place. But moving on. Saturday, this past Saturday, the February 16th, from the Microsoft Theater in downtown Los Angeles on Fox. Not Fox Sports, Fox. This is a nationally televised event. Leo Santa Cruz retains his WBA Super. Hear that right. Super World Featherweight title by a 12-round decision over Rafael Rivera, who was a late replacement for Miguel Flores, right?
Mm-hmm.
By scores of 119-109, all three cards. I know that for people who didn't see it and they hear the scorecard 119-109, it was actually a pretty entertaining fight. I mean, Santa Cruz is always like has a volume of punches, and Rivera, you know, Rivera, I think was in there to try to win, but he just, you know, he faced a more experienced guy in Santa Cruz. What do you think?
I thought it was a good fight. Definitely good for a late replacement. I thought Rivera definitely came to win. You could see early on that he was in there and you know, he wasn't just there to make up the numbers. I thought it was a good performance from Leo Santa Cruz. I'd have thought that I would have liked to have seen Leo maybe take him out because Leo really was the name in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, Rivera was a good stand-in, definitely a good late replacement.
Yeah.
But, you know, to get his name out there, would have been good to see him take Rivera out and then, you know, call out Carl Frampton, Gary Russell Jr. like he did. Obviously, you know, he was in there, threw a lot of punches like he always did. Was it
over? I think he threw like 1,200.
I think it was 1,276 punches, which is the highest ever.
It's insane.
No, sorry, his second highest ever behind.
Second like, highest ever. 1,200 punches, and that was his second highest.
Behind
what?
1,350 when he fought Vusi.
I'm telling you,
Malinga, the vacant bantamweight title back in 2012.
I'm telling you, Santa Cruz, that's his calling card, man. Like, that's how you can draw people, like the casual fan. Like, oh yeah, this guy throws the most punches in boxing. Like, oh, I want to check this out. You know, I heard that, you know, this guy throws over 1,500 punches a fight. That's intriguing. It's just regular people.
Do you know, I was thinking about this when I was driving in, and there was a question like a tornado. I was going to ask you is, do you think Leo Santa Cruz is underrated? You think he's overrated? Like, how'd you look at him? I think the only problem with me is that he doesn't seem to ever really have much drama in his fights. You know, you can watch a Leo Santa Cruz fight, and in the middle round, you can kind of take a little bit of time off, kind of, you know, play on your phone or something like that, because he throws a lot of punches, but there's never much drama.
I agree with that.
Yeah?
I think he tries, though.
He throws a hell of a lot of punches.
I think he
always comes in fit.
Yeah.
He just doesn't seem to have, you know, like concussive power. Or he doesn't seem to, you know, jump on opponents when they're hurt and try and take them out all the time.
But I think he does try, though. I mean, like, because especially going back to this fight against Rivera, when the 10-second clapper sounded at the end of the 12th round, you can remember they looked at each other, they kind of just nodded their heads like, all right, last 10 seconds, and they just started throwing. I mean, he's done that before. So, you know, I think, yeah, it's kind of weird to say, like, he throws so many punches and he does that, but...
And he's a multi-weight world champion.
Yeah, but there's not really like that drama. You would think with that many punches and that volume and all that, he would have a lot more moments, but he kind of doesn't. It's kind of ironic to say that, actually.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but it does make sense, though. But I don't think that... I think he does try. I think he does go in there because, I mean, even in the corner for this fight, his dad was telling him, you know, don't fight for the fans. Like, fight smart, fight for you because, like... I mean, he says that. A lot of people say, like, oh, yeah, you know, I fight for the fans. I do this and that. But, you know, sometimes it's just a public statement to say it. And, you know, we understand it. But I feel like Santa Cruz, when he says, like, yeah, I do this for the people, for the fans, stuff like that, I honestly believe it. He goes in there. He's like, you know what? I got to look good. I got to do my thing.
You would say he's underrated then? I mean, he's 36-1, multi-weight world champion. But if I sat there and said to you before I asked this question, like, hey, name me 10 pound for pound. He probably wouldn't be in your top 10.
I don't think he would be in my top 10.
Even though he's 36-1?
I mean, you know what? I don't know. I wouldn't say he's overrated, but I wouldn't say he's underrated. I think he's...
That's about where he should be?
I think so. Because, I mean, like, you don't really hear his name, like you said, pound for pound out there and stuff. Even though, like, he's got a good resume, he's done his thing, like, you would think just on paper he would be, but I don't know. That's a good question. That's a very good question.
Thank you.
Listeners, check it out. You know, that's a pretty good topic to discuss. Is he overrated? Is he underrated? Or is he properly rated?
Because he has a good following. Like that, the Microsoft Theater, it's a small theater. And I would have said it was about full, 5,500. And then, you know, the two fights with Abner Mares, they were good sellouts. And he does have a good following in, you know, Southern California.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
he likes fighting out here.
He's known over in Britain due to his fights with Cal Frampton.
I think he should go back over there.
I think even though Cal Frampton lost to Josh Warrington, I think people still want to see the third fight.
Yeah, well, if Santa Cruz goes over there to fight Frampton, I think it'll be bigger.
Yeah, because
I don't think Frampton should come over here for a third fight.
No, I agree. I think the British fans with the British boxing at the minute, I think they'd pay to see that.
Yeah.
Both fights were good. They were exciting fights. It would have been better if, you know, Cal Frampton had a title to, you know, to unify the two belts, the IBF and the WBA Super Duper. But if he doesn't fight Cal Frampton, who do you think? Oscar Valdez, Josh Warrington, Gary Russell Jr.?
I think obviously...
You're going to go with your favorite, obviously, Kanzu, the WBA
My
regular.
Man, Kanzu. I'm telling you, people are sleeping on Kanzu. You know what? I don't even think that's how you pronounce it. I think we talked about that last time. I think it's like Shin... I don't know. I heard it pronounced differently, but I'm ignoring that. His name is Kanzu.
On TLR.
On TLR, it's Kanzu. Mm-hmm. So... It's just like we tweeted out DAZN put something out on Valentine's Day.
That's right.
Kanzu Valentine's Day card. Hey, that was my favorite card I've ever seen. So Kanzu, I apologize if we are saying your name wrong because I know we probably are. But it's just better to call you Kanzu. Better marketing, at least on TLR. So if it sticks, it's because of us. It's because of us. But in terms of who Santa Cruz mentioned, obviously out of that list, Valdez, Warrington, Russell Jr., and my man Kanzu, I think Gary Russell Jr. is obviously going to be the one he's going to fight because they're both under the PBC banner. I would love to see Valdez and Santa Cruz. That's who I want
to
see.
I would like to see.
Out of all of them. Warrington too, but I think in Southern California, Valdez, Santa Cruz, that they put Mara's in Santa Cruz at Staples Center. I think Valdez, Santa Cruz can do a Staples Center in Southern California.
I would like to see like a little tournament there. I'd like to see Valdez, Warrington, because they're two absolute warriors. They'll just stand and fight in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Leo Santa Cruz against Gary Russell Jr., two boxers, and then the winner of all those, just, you know?
Yeah. I'd do my man Kanzu versus Joseph Diaz Jr.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would be a good little round robin type thing.
Because I think Diaz said he could still make 126, even though he just fought at 130.
What did you see after the fight? He called out Leo Santa Cruz.
Yeah,
he's like, "Hey, Oscar De La Hoya, let's make it."
Yeah, I mean, you got to give him props. He puts it out there, but I mean, I don't know. I don't. I think it's going to be Santa Cruz and Russell Jr.
Yeah, I think it will be.
But I would love to see Santa Cruz Valdez in Southern California. I mean, they could easily sell out that StubHub. Easily.
Yeah, Josh Warrington's also obviously just been told he has to fight Kid Galahad.
Oh, yeah.
That's his mandatory. So, you know, to hopefully see that Valdez fight in the future, Josh Warrington's got to come through that. That's a tricky fight.
Yeah, but we'll see. But it's a good division. You know, they just all have to fight each other. So, moving on. Co-main event. Omar Figueroa Jr. Gets the unanimous decision win over a friend of the show, John Molina Jr. By some very questionable scores, 99-91, 98-92, and 97-93. I know ESPN had Molina winning 96-94, as did the Fox unofficial judge, Larry Hazard Jr. I know on the punch stats, Figueroa outlanded him technically, but I thought it was way closer than that. I'm in the agreement that 99-91 and even 98-92 are ridiculously wide. What'd you think? Ridiculous.
Watching the fight before, obviously I saw the stats. I thought Figueroa was throwing a lot, but I thought Molina was getting the cleaner, more powerful work.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I personally had it by Molina by one round, 96-94. But it was an action, all action fight. I thought Figueroa was throwing a lot, but I didn't think they were connecting.
And then Figueroa didn't even make weight again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Figueroa didn't make weight. He came in looking soft, and I thought early on.
Whoa, you're calling a fighter soft, Mike?
Get out of here. He looked like he'd enjoyed Christmas.
They're going to get you now.
I thought he'd enjoyed this Christmas break, and you know he'd been hasn't fought for what, like 18 months?
Yeah, it was a long time. I mean, he had the DUI thing, and
he's had obviously a few issues outside of the ring. So, you know, early on, I was like, you know, if Molina can drag him into the late rounds, I thought Molina was going to be able to take him out or even work on the body because he was looking, you know, a little bit soft around there. But Figueroa came in. He kind of looked a little bit disinterested sometimes.
That's what I thought.
You know, in the middle rounds.
Yeah, he's like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, it looked a little bit like that. But, you know, John Molina, I thought, landed some clean work, especially the overhand rights I thought were working. He kind of looked for that shot a little bit too much.
Yeah.
I thought he could have worked his jab a little bit more, which maybe would have won him a few more rounds with the judges because, you know, Figueroa was throwing a lot of jabs and Molina nowhere near as many, which I thought could have sold it to the judges. But I don't know where they go from here for John Molina now. I think Figueroa...
I think Molina's still going to be there.
I think he'll be there because, you know, PBC are always good like that. You know, they've had people who've...
They have a big stable. They can have people fight. It makes sense.
I think we'll see him again. For me, I think Figueroa will probably end up fighting the fight that we should have seen. Was it in Easter 2017 when he put a shot?
Oh, the fight. Broner? The fight of the century?
Yeah.
Figueroa versus Broner? The world awaits?
I think that's what we'll see because, you know, they'll want to get Broner back out there.
I mean, I guess. It kind of makes sense, though. Like, Figueroa's coming off a win and Broner's coming off a loss, but, you know, a loss to Pacquiao. I mean, I don't know.
But the thing is, I think Figueroa may throw too much for Broner. I think it's...
I think Broner
could be a bad matchup because I think it'll be the same thing again.
For once, I'm picking Broner in that one. I think
you think you'll stop him?
I think Broner beats him.
I think Broner
and I never really go against Broner, but because Broner has been fighting some high level competition in the last couple of fights. I mean, Mikey,
Jesse
Pacquiao,
Vargas.
My man Jesse Vargas, JV. So, you know, I think Broner beats him. I think Broner beats Figueroa.
I think Broner will go into that fight with a lot more confidence than he would done against, you know, Mikey Garcia, Manny Pacquiao, who are big established names. I think, you know, he'll go in there thinking he's going to finish Figueroa. But I think Figueroa, just his punch output, maybe too much. If Figueroa comes in shape, you know, the same problem that Broner's had.
That's a big statement. It comes in shape.
Well, this is the show for the picking the underdogs, you know.
I guess.
As you do, Danny, you know.
I mean, like I said a couple minutes ago, this fight against Molina was contracted at 140 pounds. And then he's had trouble making weight in the past. And then a couple days before, like a day or two before, they say, he didn't make weight.
Well, I think we can say it now because the fight's over. John Molina told us that it was Figueroa's that were trying to pick 140. And John Molina was kind of like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember him telling
us? They wanted 140.
And John Molina was kind of like, well, you have trouble making weight. Are you sure you want that? So he said that there was going to be stipulations in that and big fines for Figueroa if he didn't make weight.
Yeah.
So I'm sure John Molina probably made a nice little payday.
You know, he paid him out of his purse. He's like, oh, you know, I messed up. Because it wasn't even like he missed weight by like half of a pound, like a pound or anything like that. It was the fight was then contracted at 145. Like what? 5 pounds? I don't know. I just thought it was as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, come on. Are you serious? Like, what happened here? But
I mean, no, it was all over Twitter, wasn't it? Figueroa missed weight. And in other news, water is wet.
Yeah, water is wet, but whatever, you know, I think it's ironic though that Molina told us they wanted 140 and look at what happens, 5 pounds over the limit.
Easy money.
Also on that card, we had, DJ, is it Creel?
Mm-hmm.
Gets the 12th round KO right at the end over Carlos Lincona for the IBF minimum weight title. I'm telling you, these minimum weight fighters, they're entertaining. People got to, and this is a world title fight too. Lincona was down 3 times in round 12. Right at the end, man, he could have made it, finished the fight and be like, all right, at least I finished. Nope.
He just had to last that one round as well because he was winning in all the cards, and then he went in and Creel corner did the right thing and kind of told him, you need to go for it.
Yeah.
And he did.
He went for it and he got the W. He got the W, you know, right at the end, too. Or like Chavez Jr., Meldrick Taylor, remember that?
Yeah, well, it's good, you know, to have those corners not like...
Not Chavez Jr., I'm talking about his dad, sorry. Chavez Jr. almost did it against Sergio Martinez. He was almost there, but didn't work. But yeah, minimum weight title, minimum weight action. What is it, 105?
Yeah, it's like one of the smallest,
isn't
it?
That's insane,
like 105. I think I weighed that when I was at 10.
I thought you were like 2 when you weighed that. You're fat. But I don't know. Maybe it was just me.
I've got a face for radio.
He's got a face for radio. He's got a voice for radio and a face for radio.
And a body for radio.
And the body for radio. Also on that card, real quick, going through Carlos Balderas, who I feel, you know, I know he was signed by Ringstar and stuff. It's been like a couple years. Like you would feel his presence would be a lot more noticeable, but it's really not.
I think the emergence of Teofimo Lopez, because they had a bit of a rivalry in the amateurs, I think is actually, in a strange way, it's going to push Carlos Balderas on, because Balderas took his USA spot, which is the reason
true.
That
I read about that.
Which is the reason that Teofimo Lopez fought for, who was it?
Fought for what?
Who did he fight for in the Olympics?
Antarctica, yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know who he fought for.
Was it like Panama?
Honduras? He's Honduras.
Honduras, that's
Honduras.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it, Honduras. So, and that's the reason that he ended up fighting over there. So I think the emergence of Teofimo Lopez may actually put on like Carlos Balderas, because, you know, I've heard he's been getting a lot of my interviews asking him about that rivalry. So,
but it helps, though. It helps his career.
Exactly, which I think is going to strangely push him on. And then we may even see fight in the pros.
That'd be interesting to see.
That'll depend on whether Teofimo moves up in weight.
Yeah, but I mean, just looking at the eye test, of course, Teofimo Lopez is obviously ahead right now of Balderas.
Yeah, streets and streets ahead, at the minute.
So, you know, but hopefully that lights a fire under Balderas and be like, you know what, man, I took this guy's spot. I'm going to come back up and do my thing, and I'm going to try to get a fight with this guy and beat him. So, hey, you know, light a fire under him. But he gets the technical decision in the third round against Jose Torres, who was down from a body punch in round one. And then obviously Torres' corner stops the fight after round three. So
saving for another day.
Quick work. Quick work on a quick night for Carlos Barderas, who improves to 7-0. And then moving on, fight previews. Fight previews of the show. This Saturday, the 23rd, from the Minneapolis Armory in Minnesota, on Fox Sports 1, Anthony Durrell, who also has a brother, Andre Durrell, right? Didn't one of them retire? Didn't Andre retire?
Was yeah.
It? He did, right?
Okay. After his fight with Uzcategui, I think.
That's what it was. Yeah, I was like, I think he retired. For the vacant WBC World Super middleweight title. And this isn't called super because it's super. This is a super middleweight classification. So there's a difference. There's a difference. Durrell goes up against Avni, what is it?
Yildirim.
Yildirim.
Who people will remember when he
21-1.
His only loss came to Chris Eubank Jr. in the first series of the World Boxing Super
the
Series.
UK legend Chris Eubank Jr.?
That's the one.
He's back. He's back. Who, his dad? Didn't his dad just say he could beat Canelo?
His dad also said he's going to be the next Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, so.
I think he needs VADA testing.
He's coming in. He's going to be he's going to be the next Floyd, and he could beat Canelo. So, hey, if it happens, we called it here.
There you go.
Eubank Jr. at the top of the game. It's going to be Joshua Canelo Eubank Jr. Watch. He's going to come in out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. But like you said, Yildirim lost to Chris Eubank Jr. in the World Boxing Super Series in October 2017, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's this Saturday on Fox Sports 1. That should be a pretty exciting fight. I know they didn't really have name recognitions and stuff like that, but that should be an exciting fight. I mean, Durrell's 32-1-1. Yildirim's 21-1 for the vacant WBC World Super Middleweight title. Who had the title? Who dropped it? Is this? Oh, this is the one that Ramirez had.
Yeah, this is the one that Ramirez had.
Gilberto Ramirez, and then he vacated it to move up to 175.
Yeah, and then this was ordered by the WBC. It should be a good fight. I think, Durrell had the title until he lost to, was it Badou Jack back in 2015?
Yeah.
Then he's been on a five-fight win streak to get him back into contention. You know, so hopefully if he wins this, he'll become a two-time world champion. Yildirim is a pretty straightforward type of fighter. He just...
Straight up and down.
Straight up and down. He just comes in. He's strong for that weight category. He comes in just, you know, really just comes straight at you. No movement, just a power puncher, which was perfect for, you know, for someone like Chris Eubank Jr. He's pretty raw. You know, he hasn't got much footwork, much
pretty
defense.
Pretty raw. Pretty Monday night so raw.
If Durrell really has anything left, I think he should really win this fight.
If he has anything left.
So we'll have to see. You know, it's a good fight for him. It's the perfect chance. There's no real name in there to, you know, to become a two-weight world champion fighting someone like Yildirim. So,
I mean, hopefully this you know, pushes him forward now. They're like, hey, there's a title on the line.
Yeah, because if you look at Yildirim, really, he's the only name of note that most boxing fans will recognize will be Chris Eubank Jr., and that's the fact that he lost.
Right. In association. That's why his name's recognized. Yeah,
exactly.
That makes sense.
Kind of said something after having 22 fights and he's fought Chris Eubank Jr., that's it. To really get a WBC world title shot is kind of obscure to even really be up there, especially to be a mandatory.
It's a big opportunity. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, I hope they fight their asses off because this is, you know, they're going to get world title, whoever wins. So, good luck to both of them. That's this Saturday on Fox Sports 1. Also, this Saturday, from your neck of the woods, O2 Arena in London, UK. Is this really a big fight over there? James DeGale versus who we just talked about, Chris Eubank Jr. for the vacant IBO World Super Middleweight title. Didn't Eubank Jr. have the IBO for the longest time? And he was all proud of it. And people were like, that's not a real world title. He's like, yeah, it is.
He was wearing it everywhere, taking it to nightclubs and stuff like that. I think the fight in the UK is kind of big because it's a domestic rivalry. James DeGale had Eubank come in for some sparring one time when Chris Eubank had just kind of turned pro.
Yeah.
Chris Eubank supposedly was, you know, like doing the old Prince Nazim flip into the ring and, you know, strutting around the gym thinking he was the the dog's bollocks, as they say. So
the dog's bollocks.
You know, James DeGale ended up throwing him out the gym. So Eubank took to social media and started telling everybody, like, oh, yeah, he threw me out the gym because I was kicking his ass and sparring. So
I wish there was video of that. If anybody has video of that, please put it out there.
Yeah, so ever since then, there's been kind of a bit of rivalry on social media. You know, DeGale ended up dropping the IBF title because he was supposed to fight Jose Uzcategui.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there wasn't really much money in there for him. Uzcategui at the time was kind of an avoided fighter. So,
well, remember Uzcategui's manager,
Jose Cital,
had told us just before the Caleb Plant fight a couple weeks ago. He said that. He's like, you know, DeGale didn't want any of us. He vacated the title.
Yeah, DeGale said in a recent interview that, like, I think it was Al Haymon told him, like, hey, you can defend the title against Uzcategui for X amount of money, or you can drop the title and go and fight
Eubank Jr.
Eubank Jr.
Which is a bigger fight in the UK.
In the UK for, you know, XXX type, you know, type of money. So, you know, in that, when you look at it in that limelight, you kind of think to yourself, you know what, it's probably a good idea. You know, he's coming to the end of his career. He's had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
He needs to try, you know, get a few more just big fights.
Hopefully he doesn't get his teeth knocked out again.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, James DeGale he's had a lot of injuries. He says he's had some shoulder problems the last few years that he kind of kept quiet. That's why, you know, his performances weren't great. He looks a lot more motivated for this. He looks in actually good condition already, even though, you know,
does he have a nickname? Does he have a nickname? Does DeGale have a nickname?
I can't remember what it was actually now.
I don't think he does. Or am I wrong?
I don't know. Normally it's just seems to be
Eubank Jr. does, doesn't he? What is Eubank Jr.'s? I don't think they have nicknames. I'm gonna look it up.
Eubank must do.
You better
he
wait.
Loves himself that much, but
hold on, you better wait. I'm gonna look. Okay, well, you hold on. I gotta know this. I'm looking it up. Just like last time when I looked up Gancio from Blythe. I'm looking it up here. What is it? Chris Eubank. And I'm sure there's people yelling at their radios or their phones right now. It's this. Hold on. Am I wrong? Livingstone. Nope, that's his middle name.
That's his, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I feel like he would have one just because how he carries himself and his dad carries himself.
That's crazy, isn't he?
So,
but this is the first time since being a pro that he's actually had a trainer, Chris Eubank Jr.
Really?
He's always been trained by himself or just by his dad. He was trained briefly by Roger Mayweather. And then,
oh, yeah, I remember that because I saw him at the Mayweather gym.
He's now trained by Nate Vasquez from the Mayweather gym, but he's obviously over in England training with him. So, which I think should be quite good. I saw an interview with Nate where he was saying that he kind of just told Eubank the truth when he was looking for a trainer, just told him, like, hey, your footwork absolutely sucks, your defense sucks.
Yeah, but that's good though. We got to be honest with these guys.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what he kind of reminds me of, or maybe Ryan Garcia.
Really?
It's like Ryan Garcia.
That's a pretty big comparison.
It's just because,
speaking of, he's got some baby drama going on too.
Yeah. But Eubank Jr. seems to be one of those fighters that concentrates on what he's good at.
Right.
You know, his fast hand speed, and all he does is put Instagram videos of him hitting the bag or hitting the machines.
Oh, are you talking about in that regard?
Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
And it seems
I thought you were talking about fighting. I was like, no, that's a pretty big comparison. I said that pretty...
But, like, they have the same sort of things. They concentrate on just what they're good at.
I get what you're
saying. And then their defense and their footwork is something they need to improve on. But they're like, oh, you know, I'm just going to stick on loads of videos of me just doing this and I'll get fights.
I like it.
From using the social
media. Now I get what you're trying to do here.
Not their actual styles.
And if Eubank Jr. in the next couple months comes out with some baby mama drama where he, you know, knocked up some girl or something like that,
yeah,
then definitely the comparison is 100%. Right now it's probably like 95.
And I called it out first. Come back to me.
Yeah, so Mike on the TLR, the last round, called it first. So people were like, oh, I remember that. The last round called it. So,
but right going back to the fight, I'm going to go with James DeGale. I think he's too skilled. He's too...
I'm going Eubank. I think DeGale's done.
Oh, really?
I'm going Eubank.
I think he's just more of a boxer. I think that James DeGale is going to have too much experience. I think Eubank, like I was saying, his footwork's not that great. He doesn't have a great defense. They don't seem to really like each other. And I think that's going to drive DeGale on to be like, hey, you know what? I can't go out on a loss to Chris Eubank Jr.
Yeah.
Because if he loses, where does he go? Does he want to drop down to below domestic level or look for another domestic fighter? The only fight that would have been there would have been the George Groves rematch.
Right.
And Groves has retired.
for now.
Yeah, true, for now.
So you're going DeGale, I'm going Eubank.
Because Eubank, I think if he loses,
I feel like I should go DeGale, but I'm not.
I think Eubank can rebuild. He's young enough that he probably could rebuild, and he's already had a couple of losses. Every time he's stepped up, he's lost.
That's true. That's true.
George Groves, Billy Joe Saunders.
I mean,
you want to repick?
No, I'm still going Eubank. I'm still going Eubank. So I'm telling you, one day his dad is gonna like pro wrestling. He's gonna tag him. He's gonna tag in during a fight. You know what? I'm going in there to take over the fight.
I can see his dad running in, you know, like a mum, and just hitting him with his handbag or something like that.
Yeah,
like, leave my son alone.
Trying to save him.
Yeah,
you know, he tags in at the sixth round. Like, oh, you know what? I'm taking over. I got my gear on under this suit, under this extreme slim fit suit. Moving on. Also on that card, Joe Joyce, 7-0, goes up against your favorite heavyweight at the moment, Bermain Stiverne, who hasn't been in the ring since he got ridiculously stopped by Deontay Wilder. I remember those photos where the referee jumps over to stop Wilder from like beating him up. And that was 15 months ago. 15 months ago. So almost a year and a half that Stiverne hasn't been. I mean, like, you know, you really think Stiverne really wants to fight? He's like, oh, you know, they offer him a payday. Yeah, I'll jump in there. I mean, he's 40 years old.
I mean, that one round blowout was it one fight in 3 years?
Yeah. So, come on. I mean, I know he was like a replacement too in that fight, I think, because I think Wilder was supposed to fight who was he supposed to fight? And I think Stiverne had to jump in because, was it Ortiz?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when he got tested for the blood medication.
Yeah, it was Ortiz. Right. Yeah, and then Stiverne jumped in. So, you know, it is what it is. But Joyce has been training up here in Big Bear, California with Abel Sanchez. He's also been sparring with Malik Scott. So I like Joyce. I think he's got a lot of upside. I like that he's trained out here in Big Bear, isolated, Abel Sanchez. I'm going Joyce, of course. Stiverne's just, I think he's just there for the paycheck now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good fight for Joe Joyce. Obviously, he's a little bit older, even though he was turning pro. So he kind of needs to be moved a little bit quicker. I think Stiverne is probably past it, you know, especially his performance in his last fight. He's obviously not getting any younger. I think 40 years old now. So I think it should be a win for Joe Joyce. And I'd like to see Joe Joyce look a little bit more polished. I think sometimes he's a little bit robotic.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 7-0. We got to give him some time. So, but I think with Abel Sanchez and stuff, I think he's. I like it. I like that pairing. So
you do? Think it'd be a good fight for him?
I like it. I mean, I think Joyce is gonna stop Stiverne. I think Stiverne's just done.
Punching back.
Yeah, but I think Joyce training with Abel Sanchez. I think it's good. But like I said, give him some time. He's only 7-0. He's got a lot of upside. You know, he's marketable. It could work.
Mm.
So, also on that card, Lee Selby moving up two weight divisions after he lost to Josh Warrington last year, which was actually surprising because I think a lot of people picked Selby in that one.
I did. I picked Selby.
So Selby goes up against Omar Douglas. And Douglas is also moving up one weight class. You know, what do you think? I mean, you went out for when Selby was out here in LA. Which he could still be, I'm not sure. But you went out there and actually, no, he's probably over there now. But you went out there and saw Selby train for a little bit. And then if you go on our Twitter and our Instagram, you know, Mike puts on the body protector and Selby just nails him. So, and then he gives you what?
That wasn't the brightest decision I've ever made.
It was not. It was not. He just nails you with body shots. But, you know, what'd you think seeing him there and in preparation for this fight? I mean, I'm going Selby with this one.
Yeah, I'm picking Selby. I think it's a good fight to, you know, test the water at a new weight division. When he was over here, I saw him sparring against Charles Huerta, and he looked really good, looked really light on his toes. I thought his jab looked really quick. And also, I heard that he'd been over at Wildcard Gym sparring with Machado, who, you know, recently lost to Cancio.
Yeah.
And everybody was telling me how he was running circles, really.
Around Machado. Yeah.
Just his footwork was too good. His jab was too quick.
And we heard that a couple weeks before.
Yeah, before the Cancio.
Machado fight. So that was kind of like, you know, fortune telling.
Yeah, exactly. Which probably helps you with your underdog.
That's why I went. When you said that, I was like, you know what?
Didn't help me with my pick.
I didn't. You should have listened. And you were actually there watching. You're just like, you would think it would have convinced you being there in the flesh.
I know, exactly.
But it didn't.
But I think Selby with this weight division, I think he actually become a world champion again.
I can see it. He's still hungry.
I think he's still got a lot of upside. If he's matched well, he's still young. From what I saw in those sparring, with obviously different to a fight, but he looked good.
Yeah,
he looked quick still. Obviously, just depends on whether he has power. But in that weight division, you future fights with someone like Gervonta Davis, Cancio, Tevin Farmer. So I think people like Davis and Cancio will be good for someone like Selby because of his footwork.
Yeah,
The Tevin Farmer, that'll be a boxer against a boxer, so it could end up being a boring fight. But the other two, I think, would be good fights down the line for Lee Selby. But obviously he's got to get himself in the picture,
right?
Beat a couple of names of note before he could get up there for a world title again.
Yeah. No, I get it. And there's even guys like, Joseph Diaz Jr. at that weight class stuff. There's other fighters who, they don't have world titles, but they're good matchups.
Exactly. Good names.
Good names. So so that's at the O2 Arena in London, also this Saturday. Moving on, down here at Southern California, out there in San Diego. San Diego, California's neighbor. Tijuana, Baja California on DAZN. DAZN's first Mexico card. Brandon Bam Bam Rios, 34-4-1, goes up against Humberto Soto, 68. Yeah, you heard me right. 68-9-2. Soto's been around a long time.
His 80th fight.
And Soto's a two-time world champion at super featherweight and lightweight. Brandon Rios obviously been in some big fights. His name is he's got a good name behind him. I think this is going to be a ridiculously barn burner. Like, these guys are just going to go at it. I don't know. Hopefully Soto's not just over the hill now, being his 80th fight, and he's like, oh, let's just do it. But two Mexican Americans just going at it in Mexico in TJ.
Does Rios know any other style, Danny?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. First Mexico card on DAZN. I mean,
it should be a good fight. I think
this fight can't go. This fight can't go to decision. Commission in Mexico, TJ. Come on.
Like they always say, it's going to be Mexican.
I heard they serve beer to the media members when you cover fights in TJ. That's what I heard.
Are we going?
I'm just saying. I heard it. So, from good sources too. Sounds like a pretty fun time. But Rios and Soto, I think it's an interesting, should be an exciting fight. I mean, these guys are brawlers.
It should be interesting. Rios is obviously coming off that win against Sal Canelo Alvarez's brother.
Yeah.
Ramon Alvarez,
yeah.
Back in February 2018, which was also on DAZN.
Damn, almost a year ago.
So, yeah, it's going to be a good fight. I'm hoping that you're just not going to get too kind of fighters that are kind of past it a little bit. Soto's had a 22-year pro career so far. So I'm hoping that we're going to see a good fight. And I think Rios will come out on top. I just think that even though they're both kind of like long in the tooth, they both had long careers, I think, Brandon Rios is a little bit younger.
Yeah. I mean, you never know, though. I mean, that's why I said, this is going to be it's an interesting matchup, but Humberto Soto, I don't know. 80th fight?
I feel like
he's just going to be, I'm going to just go until I hit 100. I feel like he's going to do it. Maybe I'm wrong. But who are you going with?
I'm going to go Brandon Rios. And I think, obviously, I don't think this is going to go the distance, is it? I think Brandon Rios, 8th round stoppage. I think just being the younger fighter, not having 80 fights on your record, I think, late round stoppage for him. I think it'll just be too much.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm going Rios too. But I wouldn't be surprised if Soto takes it. I don't know. I'm telling you. Fighting TJ is just going to be crazy. Just going to be crazy. And that's on DAZN, too. So if people want to watch it, it's on DAZN. And also, friend of the show, female fighter, Christina Castle. Also in TJ. There's fights in TJ all over the place now. I'm telling you, TJ is going to be the next Vegas. I'm telling you. Christina Castle fights also this Saturday in Tijuana, Mexico, as she makes her debut under the Combat Sports Collective, which are friends of the show. I don't know if you guys remember when Luis and Andy came on, the performance coach for Leah Santa Cruz, Munguia, he trains all these guys. Chon Zepeda, who actually just fought Ramirez, who we actually ruled that fight for, 115-113. So, you know, hopefully he gets a rematch or he gets another big fight. But we'll touch on that in another show. Christina Castle, who's also a part of that team, is fighting February 23rd, this Saturday, in TJ. So at the Cheers Bar and Grill, right? So, you know, good luck to her. And then, you know, I'm telling you, everybody's fighting in Mexico. But if you think about it, a lot of people, when they start off their career, a lot of them fight in Mexico because you can fight a lot. You can fight a lot, get your record up, get a lot of experience, and then you come to the U.S.
And they can fight when they're younger.
Yeah, exactly. Mexico's rules are a lot more lax. So, you know, is there a good and bad thing behind it? Doesn't matter. If you're cool with it.
If they're giving beer to media, you may see me down there.
That's true. That's true. I think Mike, you know, for our Mexican listeners out there in Mexico, I think you're going to see Mike there soon. You might see him this Saturday. There's two cars there. He's going to go to one and then go to the other.
Yeah, let's take the weekend off work.
You never know. You never know. But, you know, if you are looking to sponsor Christina Castle, reach out to our friend of the show, El Mejia Photography on Instagram. That's his handle. Remember, El, like Larry or Luis, El Mejia Photography. If you want to reach out to sponsors, I'm telling you, we got to get the last round on sponsorships too. You know, put them on somebody's shorts, somebody's butt, right in the back. LTR. I'm telling you, LTR right on the backside right there. I'm telling you, they knock somebody out. Or
just be known for butt sponsorship.
Hey, that's marketing right there. Think about it. Be like, oh, I know those guys. Like they put other logos on people's asses.
Think
about it. I'm telling you, it could work. It could work. You think you're laughing now, but I'm telling you, it could work. And then news and notes of the show. Usyk, still talking about his move up to heavyweight, possibly fighting in May against Povetkin, which I'm hoping happens.
That'd be amazing.
I am hoping that happens because, I would have gave Usyk a pass to go up to heavyweight and just like fight somebody who's, you know, just to get used to the weight. Man, if he goes in there and goes straight for a guy like Povetkin, ridiculous. I'm hoping that happens. I'm hoping.
It'd be a good fight. Obviously,
Don't let me down, Usyk. Come on.
You got that rivalry as well between the Russian and the Ukrainian. And then, you know, just jumping straight up there from cruiserweight, just fighting a former champion in Povetkin, you know, who recently lost to Joshua. But apart from that, you know, he performed pretty well. He actually rocked Joshua a few times.
Yeah.
He's obviously probably picking Povetkin because he's kind of smaller compared to, you know, the legit giants of, you know, Joshua.
Yeah, he's smaller in stature, but Wilder. he can still fight. He packs a punch.
Oh yeah, definitely. So you know, I can see why that would be his first dance up at heavyweight, being slightly smaller.
I wouldn't even call it a dance. That's a brawl.
I think it would be. I could see actually Usyk winning that and actually, you know, weirdly dance his way to victory. You know, just stay on his toes. You know, peppering from the outside.
I like it though. That's I hope it happens. I hope that happens. I really hope that happens. That's intriguing. That's really intriguing. But that's possible for this May. They're talking about May 18th. So maybe, maybe not. But May's actually shaping up to have some pretty decent cards that whole month.
Well, obviously we've got Canelo Jacobs to be in the big one.
Yeah.
And obviously if we get that as well.
Usyk Povetkin possibly.
Straight after that, obviously June, we're going to touch on in a second.
Joshua
against Miller at the beginning of June. So it should be a good summer.
May, June is, you know, summer months coming in hot. And like you just touched on, Anthony Joshua, June 1st, Madison Square Garden, making his U.S. debut against Jarrell Big Baby Miller. And then reportedly it was the biggest pre-sale for a boxing event at MSG. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, and I can see why. Did you see the ticket prices?
I didn't. Were they cheap?
Absolutely ridiculous. They were something like, I think the cheapest was like $115 and all the way up to like $2,000. So
no way.
Well, you can see why it's the biggest in terms of financially because they were ridiculously priced.
I mean, if that's actually true though, we're pre-sale and record-breaking, I mean, hey. That's a pretty big deal regardless. I mean, I know people want to see Joshua Wilder, Fury, and all those guys, but, you know, hey, Madison Square Garden, Joshua coming across. A lot of English fans are going to make the trip. It's probably, what, like a 3-4 hour flight?
Yeah, I think it's like 4 or 5 hours, maybe.
Four or five hours to New York. From the UK to New York. So,
but it's not a bad price for a flight, you know, London straight into New York.
Yeah. So maybe we'll check it out. You know, maybe we'll go represent from Southern California. You never know. You never know. It'd be a fun fight to cover at MSG. But, you know, we'll touch on that, of course, as it gets closer. You know, Miller's obviously excited. I don't know if you saw his videos that he posted, but he's excited.
I think the build-up will be fun. You know, he's a real good trash talker.
Yeah.
Better than Anthony Joshua is, so I think we could see a little bit of friction there because Miller's good on the mic where you could see that Joshua's very robotic and you can see that I think a lot of the things he says have been rehearsed.
Yeah.
He's been told what to say. So I think when you've got, you know, Miller there talking a lot of trash to him, I think Joshua's going to be kind of shocked and, you know, not really know what to say. So it should be interesting.
I like it. But at least Joshua's coming over here and finally make his U.S. debut. So he needed that because after a while, selling at Wembley Stadium is great, 100,000 people, but you gotta, for now that you took over the U.K. over there, you got to come to the USA. So I'm glad he's finally coming over here. And then hopefully, I mean, we say hopefully, but then Wilder and Fury come into the mix and, you know, Joshua fights one of them at least. So, and then retirement news, Andres Fanfara, who probably his biggest win was against Chavez Jr., withdrew from his fight against Edwin Rodriguez and announced his retirement. So he's out.
Scheduled to be on the Sean Porter undercard March 9th.
Yeah, out here in Southern California at the not the Dignity Hell, StubHub.
StubHub, yeah.
It's still the StubHub to me. Or is it the Home Depot Center? Either way, it's the StubHub Center to me. So, you know, Andres Fanfara, I don't know the details about why he had pulled out, but he's out. He's retired. I don't know.
I think he said in a recent interview he was just more to do with, you know, in training camp, and he just lost that love.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's a pretty big statement. He's just like, you know what? Forget it. I'm out. Like
10-week training camp, and then you go and get in the ring, get punched in the face, you know? I think, what am I doing here? You need that fire, so understandable.
I mean, hey, you know, if that's how he wants to go out, good for him, man. I mean, I think he had a pretty decent career. He beat Chavez Jr., right?
There you go.
That's
your career made just there.
Yeah. So, you know, like, I'm hoping he got pretty decent payday for that. And then he got some decent paydays after that because of that win. Like, you know, because, I mean, hey, you know, Julio, the son of the legend, Chavez Jr., you know? So, but also news, like I said at the beginning of the show, news that we learned just before we came on air, which is huge. We were touching on it just before we started recording. Tyson Fury, the Gypsy King, signs a deal with ESPN over here in the U.S. That's huge. That is big news. And then people were talking about that it puts a damper on the negotiations with Wilder because Wilder's with PBC Showtime, Fox, and stuff like that. And now Tyson Fury is with ESPN. I mean, it does. Like, you know, just looking at it from on paper like that, it does hinder the negotiations. But hopefully it doesn't kill them. But it's smart, though, because look at it this way. Like we talked about before, Joshua has DAZN. Wilder has Showtime, PBC. And ESPN was probably looking at the landscape like, well, dang. Well, they all have major heavyweights. Well, Fury doesn't have a U.S. partner. And they approached him, and it worked. So now ESPN has Fury. Wilder has Showtime, PBC. Joshua DAZN, Sky Sports, if you want to call that. That's all the major players are in now.
Yeah, it makes sense. We just got to hope that we don't see the usual trash where, you know, people can't fight because they're like, well, if we make this fight, it has to be on ESPN. Or no, it has to be on Showtime.
Well, that's why. Like, it is going to make the negotiations a lot more difficult, but
yeah,
that's big news. That's big news. So
we just hope for the fans. You know, we all want to see those fights, and it was already hard enough and pretty much impossible how long have we been calling for Joshua to fight Wilder and then okay fight Fury, but at least Fury seems to be you know, like he calls himself, like a fighting man. You know, he comes back straight away, just gets in the ring with Wilder. So I'm hoping that, you know, someone like him, he's very outspoken that if he wants to fight, I'm hoping that he'll get it made.
Well, that's why like I like Fury in that sense where I'm sure before he signed the contract with ESPN he said, look, I want to do it. I want to sign this deal. I want to jump on with you guys. But you know, you guys got to work with me because I still want this Wilder fight. I still want to get this Joshua fight. I feel like Fury's that type of guy. Like, no. Like, when he said, when he made this last Fury, this last Wilder fight, the first fight, he even said, like, no, call Wilder, let's make that fight. And even Frank Warren told him, like, oh, no, you should need a couple fights under your belt before you just came back. And he said, no, make the Wilder fight. And they both say that negotiations were easy. They both wanted to fight. So I'm hoping that that's still moving over into this, now that this has been announced with the ESPN and everything. I'm hoping it works. I'm hoping it works. Are you in agreement? I mean, I don't know. I hope
it needs to work.
It needs to work. Yeah. You know, like, you know, with all this hype, how Wilder and Fury have been talking about building a rematch, negotiations here. They're talking about May or this and that. I mean, who else could they fight technically at the moment?
Well,
and then they're trying to show up Joshua because they're like, oh, well, yeah, Joshua doesn't want to fight us. So, like,
top rank in ESPN obviously just signed Pulev. So, the easy one.
And he's fighting
to make
next month.
Stable. Would be Tyson Fury, Pulev.
But yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
But nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see that.
He's come back in, he's fought Wilder.
Yeah.
Hopefully they just turn around and they do it again.
Yeah, but I don't know. That's big news, but of course, more details will release as we move on the year and as the summer months come, so which I'm assuming when Fury's going to come back. And then also, real quick, before we end the show, Billy Joe Saunders is back in the middle.
Moving up a division.
He's back in the boxing game, moving up from middleweight to super middleweight, fighting against, was it Shifat in Sufi, for the vacant WBO super middleweight title?
Yeah, it looks like Ramirez has either dropped it or...
Dropped it or what? Or he's moving up to 175 to fight Sergey Kovalev, right?
Yeah, it looks like that's what's going to happen.
Which I think it's a dangerous move, but... You know, whatever. We'll see how that goes. So, there's a lot of moving parts going on right now.
Yeah, but it, I mean, obviously, it would be good for him to pick up the WBO super middleweight. Yeah. He says that he can switch between middleweight and super middleweight. But if he wins, which he should do, you know, he sets up big fights in the future against Callum Smith, Chris Eubank Jr., or James DeGale.
There's a lot of options.
So a lot of big British fights for him, you know.
There's a lot of options. Yeah, I'm sure they offered that to him, or they told him, like, hey, this could work. So it's smart. He can move. If Canelo's moving between 168, 160, Triple G might follow suit, like 168, 160. It looks like that's the norm right now. But, you know, thanks again for listening to episode 22 of LTR, the last round, you know, recorded here in Southern California. We're going to get a guest soon. We're kind of on a dry spell with some guests, so we're in the process of scheduling some people in the future, and we're going to have some people coming on. We should have some pretty exciting guests you guys would appreciate. But once again, I'm Danny Z for Michael Shepard. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.